people agreeing with him and thinking that was very good news, and some people who didn't agree with him and said that that couldn't possibly be true. So given the fact that, you know, we're still in huge trouble economically, we thought it might be interesting to get another perspective on bailouts and bailouts, and in particular the bailout for Greece. We have on the line there for Professor Yanis Varoufakis, who is a professor of economics at the University of Athens. Good morning to you, Professor.
Good morning.
Okay, so what's your view about the bailout for Greece and the involvement of the IMF and the EU in Greek economic affairs?
Well, it is a dead end, which unfortunately is dragging down along with Greece, your country, and then it is fueling the domino effect, which will very soon, unless checked by other means and other policies, it will bring down the whole of the Eurozone and the Euro structure.
So, okay, just on that point, do you think that's inevitable almost at this stage, that the Eurozone and the Euro itself is in danger of collapse?
It is going to happen with mathematical precision until and unless the European Union decides to try a completely different tactic for arresting the evolving, unfolding and accelerating crisis.
Okay, why do you say it's going to happen with mathematical precision?
Well, let me put it very simply. What you have now is you have a crisis which has two different manifestations. One is a crisis of heavily indebted states like Greece and Ireland and Portugal and Spain and Italy and Belgium. And the second manifestation of this crisis is the banking sector, the European banking sector, and not just the Irish banking sector, is in deep trouble. Our European banks are zombie banks. They are banks which are neither alive nor dead. They are not dead because the European Central Bank is drip-feeding them constantly with masses of liquidity, which is public money, after all,
yes,
in order to maintain them in a sort of quasi-life. So these are the two crises, and we keep concentrating on the state crisis and not on the banking sector. Well, generally in Europe, in Ireland, I know that you do concentrate on your banks as well. So when the Troika comes to Dublin or to Athens and throws a large amount of new loans onto states that are incapable of servicing their existing loans at interest rates which are prohibitive, and at the same time imposes austerity measures that shrink GDP and therefore reduce the country's capacity to pay off those loans, what you're doing is you're creating a situation where liquidity is provided at the expense of long-term solvency of both the states and the banks. And this is like throwing gasoline on fire.
Okay, I really want to go through some of those issues. You're saying that the European banks are zombie banks, Professor. What percentage of European banks are you talking about?
All of them.
All of them?
With very few exceptions.
Even ones in countries that aren't necessarily experiencing the economic turmoil like us, for example, I'm thinking like German banks.
If you look at Germany's banking system, it's on the verge of collapse.
What makes you say that? How is it on the verge of collapse now, yeah?
Well, let me put it this way. They are replete with the bonds of the problematic states like yours and ours.
Yes.
And they do not count on getting their money back. So what happens is they are in a state of panic, which of course they are not demonstrating publicly, but behind closed doors they are panicking because their capital base is very unsafe. And so every euro that they get from the European Central Bank does not translate into new loans for businesses and households, and that fuels the recessionary dynamic within Europe, which makes the whole problem worse.
And are these banks in trouble because they lent to the likes of Irish banks and now they're up to the hilt in terms of potential bad debts?
Indeed, they are in trouble because they have lent our states during the good old days freely, expecting that they would always be able to claim their money back, but that was in the pre-2008 credit crunch period, and also because they made some very silly choices regarding their own bonds, the bonds of the private banks, and of course the infamous by now toxic money that they were investing in.
So, Professor, because this is the $1 million or maybe billion or many billion dollar questions. Should we default on the money, to put it very simply, we owe these banks? Because after all, German banks and English, British banks lent very recklessly to our bad banks during the boom times. So, you know, why should taxpayers, these are questions Irish people are asking, why should we bail out now these German banks and these British banks? Okay, we've given a state guarantee and that was a very stupid thing. But what is your review? Do you think we should just say, listen, tough luck, you know, you shouldn't have lent that recklessly to our banks that contributed to our problem. You pay for the problems now.
Well, my suggestion is a variant of that. The problem with what you just said is that if we do something like this, then the banking sector is going to collapse throughout Europe, and that is not going to help. What, however, needs to be done is a very simple, logical tactic. Instead of either squeezing the problem at the banking sector or at the state debt sector, what needs to be done is you need to bring together around the same table, negotiating table, the debt-stricken states and the problematic banks, and orchestrate an agreement between the states and the banks collectively, not just the Irish state and the Irish banks, not the Greek state and the Greek banks, but all the banks, representatives of European banks on one side, representatives of states that are in trouble on the other side, and the Troika orchestrating the conversation, suggesting something very simple, that the banks take a haircut on the bonds that they're owed, that they hold of the stricken states, in exchange for a guarantee from the European Central Bank of liquidity that would last at least 10 years. Instead of a few months, as it is now doubted.
Well, it looks like that sort of thing might be starting to happen. I mean,
well, unless it happens, there will be no euro left.
There will be no euro left. So explain this. How will there be then no euro left? If you let things go the way they are right now, where countries like Ireland are under enormous pressure to make sure that they repay these debts to these zombie banks, as you put them. If that continues, tell me then, what's the logic then that will ultimately lead to the collapse of the euro?
Well, it's very simple. When this bushfire reaches Spain, Spain is too large to save using this particular method of salvaging stricken states. And when that happens, the markets are going to react violently, and even France will be in danger. When that happens, it will be impossible to use the current bilateral system of bailouts in order to save any part of the Eurozone. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Germany, Holland, and the rest of the countries that are not in severe trouble, they will have to bail out themselves, that is, to get out of the Eurozone.
Okay, let's say the worst case scenario, which is the one that you've just discussed, happens, and that there isn't sense when these negotiations are underway right now, that you know, calm thinking doesn't actually, isn't the order of the day. And let's say the worst thing happens and Spain ultimately has to go to the IMF for help. And of course, that's impossible because there isn't enough money to help Spain. And then all the other things start to happen.
That's right.
What then? What? So this domino effect goes into play. What happens then?
Well, let me start with the historical precedent. When the crash of 1929 happened, the first victim of it was the common currency of the time, and that was the gold standard. And why did it happen? It happened because there was no political collective agreement at the level of states. If we don't have an agreement like the one I suggested, which deals with a problem simultaneously in all countries and simultaneously both in the debt and in the banking sector realms, then what we're going to have is we're going to have a breakdown of the euro. And if the euro breaks down, my suggestion, my guess, and it's only a guess, because we are in an uncharted territory, is that Europe is going to split in three monetary zones. It will be the Deutschmark for the surplus countries. It will be the euro or a variant of the euro with the Latin countries plus Greece perhaps in it. And then Ireland, you tell me, but I very much fear that against your wishes, you may have to enter the sterling zone again.
Yeah, and if that happened, let's say that wisdom doesn't prevail, the wisdom you're talking about, and that actually happens. What is it possible for a country like Ireland to continue to grow economically, or would it be a really, really bad thing for Ireland if there was a breakup of the Eurozone and potentially we're forced to partner with Sterling? Because, of course, Britain is a huge trading partner of ours. Would that be the end of the road for us economically, or is it possible we survive all of that?
I think we're going to enter a period of 10, 15, 20 years of negative growth throughout Europe. Because imagine what would happen if the Deutsche Mark separates from the euro. It will immediately appreciate massively. That
yes.
will cause a serious recession in Germany, a collapse in exports, a fall in employment, a rise in unemployment, and a downward spiral in the most productive parts of Europe. The rest of Europe will immediately devalue, so both sterling and the euro, what is left of the euro, will devalue massively. We're going to enter a currency war a la 1930s, and we know that nothing good can come out of that kind of macroeconomic protectionism, and the result will be that the collective pie for the whole of Europe, if not for the whole of the world, is going to shrink. I really do not even want to contemplate what would happen if the euro breaks up.
Okay. Professor, can you stay on the line? I want to take a very quick break and come back to you, because I want to find out from you if you think, in fact, that people in the IMF and the rest of them share your view, and that ultimately that is also the prospect that they see facing Europe if they don't get their act together and do something different. If you can just stay with us for one moment, we'll be back with you very shortly.
The Wide Angle with Karen Coleman on News Talk 106 to 108.
Now, you're very welcome to The Wide Angle. And still with me on the line from Athens is Professor Yanis Varoufakis. He's a professor of economics at the University of Athens. We got him on the line because we had a very different perspective from Athens last week on the IMF bailout. We had Professor Gikas Harduvalis, who gave a very positive perspective on the IMF intervention in Athens. But Professor Varoufakis does not actually agree with that. Professor, can I get back to you? We were talking there about the potential collapse of the euro and what it would mean for European countries. Not good news is the answer there. Presumably, if this logic is very clear to you and you believe that this is going to happen unless the banks are told to take a hit, one would hope that other economists in the likes of the IMF, the ECB, the EU Commission, I mean, after all, they have a lot of smart people there, may also view that scenario the same way that you do. If that's is that your belief? Do you think there are plenty of other people who share your view and recognise that the banks are going to have to be forced to take a hit because ultimately the euro could collapse if that isn't actually put in place, if those strategies are not put in place?
Well, I know that they agree because I talk and I have talked in the last few months with a large number of people from both the IMF, the ECB, and members of various cabinets around Europe. Of course, they will never say so publicly.
Yes.
Look, this is a problem. It's a problem of coordination. I think that the banks would jump at the opportunity to participate in a grand bargain between the Troika, the states, and the banks, because they would much rather take this cut now and start charting their future course on the basis of more certainty rather than greater uncertainty.
But why isn't this happening?
None of them are going to come out and say so, because if one bank, if Deutsche Bank comes out and suggests this, immediately there will be a run on Deutsche Bank, because the market and the public and the depositors and its creditors will start thinking that this is a sign of weakness of Deutsche Bank in particular. Similarly, Portugal is not going to come out and say something of the sort, even if the Portuguese finance minister agrees with me, because then immediately the spreads for the Portuguese bonds are going to jump up. This is why I'm suggesting that this is the duty of the European Union. The European Union has to convene this conference tomorrow morning get the parties together and get the banks to agree to swap the existing bonds for bonds of a smaller value and longer maturity in exchange for liquidity. At the same time, what I would suggest is, in order to deflate the problem further and effectively extinguish this bushfire, is for the... Look, Maastricht allows Ireland, Greece, everyone, to have 60% of their GDP in debt, in bonds. Well, this is the legal limit of our debt. Well, why can't the ECB simply take on its books bonds from all over Europe equaling 60% of every country's GDP and issue euro bonds for the same value, float them in the international markets, the Chinese, the Arabs, the Russians would love to buy them, and then the states like yours, ours, will, of course, they will not be excused that debt, but what we will be doing is we'll be paying the interest rates of 2.5%, 3% instead of 7% and 5% and 6% and 8% and 9%. That would, in one hit, in one go, in addition to the restructuring, the negotiated restructuring that I suggested, this issue of Eurobonds for 60% of GDP of the European Union would immediately shrink the total amount of debt that the Eurozone is facing.
But Professor,
and would end the crisis.
Okay, but if it's so obvious, why isn't it happening?
Tell Axel Weber in the ECB that, and he's going to start screaming. It's a political constraint, but it's not a technical constraint, and it's not an economic constraint.
Okay, where's the political constraint coming from? Is it from the banks? I mean, if the banks were to meet in secret, okay, so Deutsche Bank doesn't have to say publicly, it's now looking at accepting a restructuring of its debt.
I think Deutsche Bank would love this suggestion. The problem is with German politicians. The German polity, not just Mrs. Merkel, the German polity as a whole has an ideological commitment to the notion that every euro of debt must belong to a member state and that there should be no conflating, synthesized debt. This is an ideological commitment. It is a commitment to a euro that has a common currency but does not have anything else in common, like a fiscal policy, which is common, like debt, which is shared and bundled together. But in the end, you see, they end up bundling together debt in the... This is the European Financial Stability Facility, which is bundling debt together in the worst possible way. It resembles a CDO of the old bad old days in order to stop this kind of economic unification that would evolve out of a suggestion like
Okay,
mine.
So what you're saying really is the Germans couldn't possibly contemplate the notion that somehow or another their debts would not be repaid, or the debts that are owed to their banks wouldn't be repaid.
No, this is not it. Because they already fear that the debts owed to their banks will not be repaid. What they cannot contemplate is the notion that there will be a Eurobond. That is, that a new form of debt is going to be created in which Greek debt and German debt and Belgian debt is going to be conflated. But I'm afraid that life is going to press upon Germany this very stark dilemma.
Okay,
either accept this notion or get rid of the euro.
Okay, but if they don't accept it, what about Britain in all of this? Do you think that Britain would engage? Because after all, British banks engage in reckless lending and the Irish banks owe huge amounts of money to them as well. Do you think Britain might see it differently to the Germans and they might recognise that, in fact, this is what needs to be done?
Britain would love this to happen in the Eurozone as long as it doesn't have to participate in it. This is typical Britain.
Let's assume that this doesn't happen, because you seem to be pessimistic about this. Am I right in saying this, Professor? You're not necessarily full of confidence that actually this restructuring will happen.
I oscillate between desperation and excitement and optimism. I think that, look, in the end, Germany does not want to see the euro go, because it might very much appears what will happen if it reinvents the Deutschmark. So my hope is that typical Germany is kicking and screaming, refusing to move in that direction, but when it comes to the crunch. At the very last moment, as long as the rest of us are presenting it with a logical, rational, Cartesian solution, they may well opt for it and swallow it. If there are sweeteners attached to the proposal that the rest of us...
Okay, just one question before we go, Professor, and it's been fascinating talking with you. Was the euro a wise project, and was it right for Ireland to join the euro, which really was dictated by German economics? Because during the boom times, not that necessarily our government would have done it, we couldn't increase interest rates to stop the bubble, and we also then couldn't devalue our currency when everything started to bust up.
Well, it was clear from the very, very beginning that the euro's architecture was not a kind of structure that could withstand a major earthquake like that of 2008. We knew that 10, 15 years ago. And I think, you know what, I think that the proponents of the euro back then, important political figures, whom I didn't like personally, but who were significant figures, like Mitterrand and Helmut Kohl, I am convinced that they knew that the euro that they were creating would not sustain a big crisis. But they were hoping that politically they could push forward the currency union, which was half-baked the way they did, and they were hoping that when the crisis happens, their descendants, the leadership, the current leadership, will have to make a decision to beef up the euro by adding to it the institutions that it was missing, or let it go and perish. And those precursors, like Mitterrand and Kohl, hoped that when the crisis come, Europe would rise to the occasion and do something along the lines of what we've been discussing in this interview.
But it hasn't happened so far, of course. Well, Professor, that's been very interesting, and thank you so much for giving us all of your time. Professor Ioannis Varoufakis, the Professor of Economics at the University of Athens in Greece. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Now, coming up after the news, as the economic turmoil continues across Europe, we'll hear views on it from Germany, Greece and the UK. One of my guests on that will be a German MEP who's leading the charge to get Ireland to increase its corporation tax rate.